At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Sitting up there, jacked with Pepsi.
I'm there for the pack out. You just got to pack me in.
Committed to the bow early on. Like, I love getting close and putting up.
You cover a range of stuff on here too, right? Like,
we call this the THP World Headquarters.
You know, my grandpa Roy Weatherby.
I came into like that golden little pocket where there was like four or five different bowls. Just
you're Canadian. We're doing a Canadian podcast.
My name's Douglas Bode.
I'm Robbie Denning.
Roy Gander.
Pete's been slacking lately, hasn't it?
I slacked once, and you already had it going, so there's no worry.
You know, I did that on my podcast one time. I did an hour and a half before I realized that it wasn't recording. No guff.
Yeah, I did that too. When I very first started, I did it once.
I bet you talk to anybody who's ran one, and they've all done it, guaranteed.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So, Mike, last time we talked to you, you're chasing that monster war pig.
Yeah, you betcha.
Worked out, obviously.
Yeah.
Seen the results.
Yeah, it was the 4 years in the making come to a head. I actually didn't think I was going to get them, but it did work out.
That's awesome. So what was what did he measure when it was all said and done?
Well, you know what? I don't want to take away from him, but when I first got him green scored, like, he was off the charts big. He was like 22 5/16. But when it was, I send him away to a taxidermist to get the beetling. And then when after the beetling, and it was quite some time, like I killed him in June and I didn't get that bear back till, oh man, it was September, October. And it was only 21 and some. I just don't know off the top of my head, but yeah. I was actually pretty disappointed because of how big he was. And I have a 20-inch bear, and I put these two side by side, and you wouldn't believe that there's only an inch and some between them, but it was incredible. But I actually don't like talking about the measurements a whole lot because I was quite disappointed when I first heard him what he finally went at and I was like, this can't be, like, is the guy messing with me, because it's the story and how big he was. I'm not embarrassed of him. He's still Boone and Crockett, he's still a great big bear. It's just he lost so much that we either, one, the guy that measured it green was wrong, or two, when it was finally scored, it was wrong. And it deflated me, because with black bears, for Boone and Crockett, it's all about the size of the skull, but the bear itself and the story behind him, it took me quite a while to kind of the culture shock about how much he lost. Like, he went from top five Canada all time to just a great big bear. And, he's 21. I don't have the sheet, but
yeah, that's all
good. I want to say 21 and a half or something. He lost over an inch.
Oh,
yeah, he's
that,
fucking monster.
I showed that picture to a few buddies. Every one of them, their jaws just hit the table. Like, they couldn't believe the size of that bear. Like, it was huge.
Like, it was the story about him is so cool. Like, I don't know if you guys know Cody Robinson, the story about his big deer Sleepy, but I did an elk hunt with Cody and his camera guy last September. And I remember Cody telling me about that story. And I was like, you know, I'm not taking away from your big deer, but I said that the story you told about Sleepy is almost like what I had with War Pig, 4 years of like disappointment after disappointment and missing him and him being there when I wasn't there. And I went through the footage and I did actually see him one other time a couple of years ago. But now that I go through all my footage, but it was pretty much right at dark. But anyways, it's weird how a bear like that could live within a half mile of my friends. And, you know, I haven't got him aged yet, but we suspect he's probably 20 years or more. Oh. And they never once seen him.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Like it is crazy. Like, cause my first bait was really close to their farm, like really close. Like I want to say quarter of a mile away. And, because they're right against the forest and there was a beautiful, spruce bluff that had no undergrowth on it. And that's where I had it originally. So for the first 2 years, he was like 300 yards from their farm. And, but not once did they see him. It was crazy.
Oh. Wow. Yeah.
Call him Houdini.
I know. And fellas, when I finally got him, and I remember this, I put my arms around him in the bush to lift his head up. And I mean, I've killed some big bears. And this bear, well, I put a tape measure on when I got him back to the farm and we weighed him on the digital scale. But before that, I went to pick his head up. And it was so big that I couldn't get my arms around. So when I did get back to the camp, I measured it. His neck alone was 43 inches around.
That's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. It was incredible. And like I did all his measurements. I was going to do a life-size mount on him. His chest was 65 inches and his belly was 75 inches.
Huge. Something else.
I know. It's incredible. And something then else. Digital scaled him at 500, right at 550 pounds.
Holy shit.
And we measured him at 7'4".
Let's oh just. God.
What did you do with the hide? You getting it rugged out? Or?
I'm getting a, what they call a pedestal mount with them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was going to go with a life size. And then I already have a 3/4 mount bear here. So right. I just couldn't do another 3/4 mount bear. So. Or give this one away. So I didn't want to give like the 3/4 mount bear I have here is my very first bow kill. So I didn't want to get rid of him. So I just called up my buddy who's kind of like a world famous taxidermist. I said, what would you do minus a 3/4? And he's like, well, do this pedestal mount. So that's what I'm going to do with him. Because I mean, I could have done his whole body, but it was his head that I wanted to showcase. Yeah. And I took all the measurements, you know, so that they could match it. Cause that's one thing I was specific about with the taxer. I said, you have to have the head exactly the way it was. Cause he had jowls on him. That was like,
yeah.
Think of the most obese. And I don't want to call anybody obese, but think of the most obese person, you know, that you can think of. And you know how they just carry that around their face. That's what the war pig was like. It was just insane how big he was.
Yeah. What a beast. What a cool bear. Cool hunt. Cool story. So how many days, like that hunt specifically when you got him, like how many days in and out were you going before you were actually able to connect with him?
Well, so last year, I think when we talked, was it spring last year, just before we went out?
Spring, yeah,
so just before you got him, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think we were talking, and I think you guys were having bad weather out there too, right? Like, so we had that bad weather here. It was just like, it was about 3 weeks of snow before, you know, to make everything late. And then when the snow finally did go, it was just rain after rain after rain, and wind was so bad. So when I did get him, I'd taken a week off. So I had basically three weeks of holidays at the end of May. And I'm like, okay, because he had showed up, like, because it pushed my baits. Normally I have my baits in the bush around April 15th. And I didn't get my baits in, just like this year, I didn't get my baits in the bush until May 7th last year. And I have to get them in the bush yet. So it's going to be around the same time. But anyways, so it pushed me back like basically 2/3 of a month away. And he showed up like 3 days after. So what I do is I take, when I put my baits in there, I don't even hang my stands. I just take and put my barrel in, and then I jam it right full of frozen beavers, and I take a hatchet and I cut a couple of the frozen ones in half. And then, you know, it takes 2-3 days for that to thaw out, but then it starts to stink. And War Pig showed up 3 days after I set it. So like I was there like the 7th or something like that and set it, and like the 10th he was already showing up, and during the daylight. So wow. He completely flipped. So the first 3 years that I hunted that bear, he never once showed himself, except for 2 years ago. Right at last light, he showed up, and I passed on him. Like, I think I told you that story. Mm-hmm. And other than that, that's the only time I've ever really seen him. But this particular year, he was like daylighting him like crazy. So I knew that if I could get up there, I probably had a good chance of seeing him in the daylight. So I panned these 3 weeks towards the end of May, beginning of June, but the weather was just so bad. Like, I self-filmed that hunt too. So that added a bunch of stress to me, because whenever I want to take the camera out and do some video, it was just like 70K winds with rain sideways. And like literally every day, I'm not even kidding about that. It's just rained every day. And, it was sucking the life out of me. And how I end up getting them is I spent a whole week. So every morning, every night in the stand, for 7 days straight. And by the first 4 days, I seen lots of bears, but he disappeared. And his MO was actually, now that I kind of go through the history with him, is his MO was that he would take off kind of towards the end of May. And I'm assuming he's looking for sows. And, but then he would always show back up in June. And so I last seen him May 17th was the last time he was on camera. And I showed up there around the 20th. No, a little later than that, 22nd, to spend basically 2 weeks every day hunting them. But I mean, the weather had me so demoralized, and like I was by myself. And so not only did I hunt all mornings and evenings, but then I'm wet and cold and just nobody there really to, other than Brenda and Danny, the farmers that I stayed at. But I mean, I had no friends or anything like that. And I was losing faith quickly, because he wasn't showing up, and I was seeing lots of bears. And there was another bear that had showed up that I really contemplated shooting, but I was like, no way, I'm not doing that again. I did that the 2 years before. And so the weather progressively got better. The wind was still really bad, but the weather at least was nice. And at the day I actually got him, the night before, I didn't hunt in the morning, which is weird because I always do, but I was kind of getting defeated. I had a conference call with a couple of really good buddies of mine, and they're big bear hunters. And I basically just told them, I'm done. I'm ready to throw it in. And this bear's got me beat for another year. And they're like, you know what? Give it another day. So that next morning, June 1st, I slept in, which I never do, but I slept in. And so about 11 o'clock, I went in to check the baits, and I pulled the cards, and I went back to camp. And sure enough, he was there at like 6:30 in the morning. And he was crazy. He was there for 5 hours, and the bait was empty, because I didn't like, I think I told you guys this when last time I talked to you, like the little bears will clean you out. Like, that's mm-hmm. the thing with bear hunting, is if you put 200 pounds of grain in your barrel, say at 10 o'clock, by 6 o'clock in the evening, it's all spilt, and all the small bears have it. So the bigger bears generally pick through the scraps. So I think the secret to this particular bear is the people I stay with, they have very dear friends that are just a couple miles away. They have honey, and they always get, like in the winter, they'll get some winter kill, and a lot of their hives and stuff like that, they have to clean out. So they pool that in garbage bags for me. So I got this honey with these honeycombs and stuff like that. And I noticed the bears were really going crazy for that, along with the donuts that I was using. But so June 1st, so War Pig was there for 5 hours, and I know for a fact the bait was empty. And I think all he did was just lick at that barrel, and because of the honey. So I was like, can you believe it? The first, like in 7 days straight, I was there at 3 a.m. before light, and I would sit till 8 o'clock in the morning waiting for him. And So I'm like, okay, that's a good. So I sat that night, June 1st, and he didn't show up. And so I'm like, oh my God. So then June 2nd came and I did sit in the morning and he didn't show up. And but the weather had improved way better. Like the wind was still probably about 30-40 K, but it was like beautiful. It was like a typical June morning. And so that night, I think I had planned. Yeah, I had planned to stay at least another 5 days, at least another 5 days. And so I wasn't really upset. I knew that he was back, thank goodness. That was the biggest thing, is he was back. And so June 2nd came, and it was just like, matter of fact, it was like picture perfect. It was probably 20-30 K wind, but it was just beautiful. It was like things were starting to green up and there was just insane bear action. You could just tell that the weather had them all messed up, and I had color bears coming and going, and I had like probably 15 bears just on and off all night. It was great. And but when he showed up actually fairly early in the evening. He showed up at like 7 o'clock, and up here, kind of like it is there this time of year, you know, you got good shooting light till after 10 o'clock. And so he showed up and he came down the quad trail, but I don't know if he knew I was there. The wind was a little bit bad, I will say that. Like it was kind of swirling and heading toward where the bears come. But I, you know, my bears don't seem to be bothered by my scent. Like they, I could have a dead wind right into down their trail and they still come there. I don't know. It's just, maybe they're used to me, but so I was a little concerned about the wind and he didn't come in. He would always just circle the bait. And so he messed with me probably an hour and a half where he wouldn't come in. He came in at one point. Well, when he first came in, there was no mistaking him. I was sitting up in my tree and I was watching. There was probably three or four bears at the bait. And I know there was a color bear because it was a young one, but I was videoing that. And I looked down the trail and I could see down the trail quite a ways because it was such a late spring, there was no leaves on the trees yet. And there was no mistaking. Like I've seen big bears, and I shot, like I said, that 425 pound bear 2 years ago, which I thought might've been with him, but it's not. There's no mistaking this bear. Like he literally looked like a grizzly, and he came down the trail where like the quad trail, and he did the left-hand turn. I thought, here it is. I turned the camera on. I had one of those tree camera mounts, you know, and a buddy of mine. And I had mentioned to my friend about because I was trying to make a TV show for this. So I was self-filming it, but it was just so hard with the way the weather was. I didn't get a lot of stuff. And I said to him, if War Pig comes in, I said, dude, I'm going to shoot him with my bow and I don't care about the video. And he's like, well, the best thing to do is just pan out as far as you can, hit record. And with these 4K cameras, there's a lot they can do with zooming in and stuff like that. So that's what I did. He was coming. I turned it on. I panned it all the way out. So I had a big field of view, and then I just waited. He actually did a left-hand turn, and there was just a hazel brush about 10 yards on the quad trail. So what I do is I come down into my bait, I make a quarter of a horseshoe, I unload my bait, and then I come out on a different trail, and then I drive away. So I got like a little turnaround, and he came down the one turnaround and stopped at that hazel brush, and he looked me right in the eyes. And my buddy Blair, who's a big bear hunter and a big bear guide, he's like, Muck, if he ever comes in, do not move. Don't reach for your bow. Don't look, you know, don't do anything until he's comfortable. So I was just frozen. My heart was just pounding because like there was no mistaking this was War Pig. And I was like, that early in the day, I thought, well, I got this bear. So he stopped and looked at me, and I had no shot. First of all, I did manage to get my bow, but I was in no position. I wasn't clipped in or anything. I just had it sitting in my hand between my legs because I didn't want him to move, but he looked right at me. And I mean, I was shaking, so maybe he heard that. And then all he did was back up a little bit, and then he just went a semicircle around the bait, kind of like this big old tree, and then he just disappeared. As quick as he came in, he just lumbered away. And he made a big circle across the same trail that he came on, and then he kind of disappeared. And I'll tell you guys, like, I thought that was it. I thought I lost this bear. And to the point where I was like, I can't believe that was War Pig, and I'm not going to get him now because he saw me. And so there's a big beaver dam and water to my right, and it's only about 100 yards long. I actually thought of this. I was like, that's it. I'm done messing with this bear with my bow. I am going to grab Danny's 338, and there's an old spruce tree that was dead and leaned over. It was, I looked at it a million times since I've been there, and I'm like, I'm going to lean up and put my pack on that deadfall tree, and I'm going to wait until War Pig comes to the barrel, because when he does come in, he's there for hours. It's like he settles right in, but he must know I'm there. So I was like, I'm going to give him his room when he comes in. I'm going to, because he's so big, I said, I don't mind shooting him with a rifle. So I'm like, I'm going to, that's, I had that plan already. So I had written him off for that night, because he came and he was gone. And so that was about 7:30. He hung around for about better part of three quarters of an hour, and then he just disappeared. And oh man, I had bear action, but I was just so, I was really deflated, and I was making this plan for the next morning. I was going to get him with the rifle. And as quickly as he disappeared, he showed up at about 9 o'clock. But this time was different. This time he did two things that just blew my mind. The first thing he did is he showed up in the same spot he was when I saw him before, which is way down the trail, but the trail's a little bit higher. So it's almost like eye level. And he stopped for a brief second, and he stood up and he scratched his back like a grizzly does. Mm-hmm. And it blew, like, I looked through my binoculars, and I got pretty powerful. I think I was using 15 by 56 binoculars. And I looked through my binoculars, and I could see him stand up and scratch his back on this big poplar tree. And it blew my, I wish I would have had it on video, because it was so awestruck. It was so big, and just big fat thing that was scratching. Then he dropped down, and then he came straight down that same trail. And it's the coolest thing ever, you guys. My trail camera took a picture of him as he was. You could see him in the trail camera look to the left where he's going to make the left-hand turn into the bait. My camera took a picture of him, and then he came in, and then he stopped at that same hazel brush and looked at me. But I was smart enough that I'm like, he's probably going to do this again. Where he made the loop, he went into probably about a 10-foot opening. I ranged it with my rangefinder in advance if he did it again. So sure enough, just like clockwork, he stopped at the hazel brush, kind of backed up like he did before, and he went around the bait. And that I drew before he even got to that big tree. And then I kind of had to wait, and I had to wait for him, this big old rotten poplar tree. Once he cleared that, I let it rip with, when he was walking, I wasn't going to let him get it off. Yeah. And I normally shoot lighted knocks, but the craziest thing, bad luck for me, is I had my quad trailer and I had my quiver in the box of the quad trailer. And for whatever reason, like, I run three baits, so I have to trailer to a couple of my baits. So whenever I load up my quad trailer, I just take the hitch off and I throw it in the box. Well, for whatever reason, I had my quiver of arrows in there. I threw the receiver into the quad box. It snapped all my arrows off.
Oh no.
And they're micros, right? They're the skinnies.
Yeah.
Oh.
And they were the only ones I had lighted knocks for. But out of just sheer luck, before I went up, I, over here in my hunting stuff I have over in my corner, I had three arrows, excuse me, I had three arrows that I had from probably 15 years ago. I'm not even kidding about that. Probably 15 years ago, I had these arrows, and they're like PSC something. It doesn't matter. They're 300s, and I took them up there to just practice with, because I just hated using my unscrewing my broadheads and then retuning them all the time. So, because I'm super picky about tuning my broadheads, and so I'm like, I'm going to take these up there just to shoot practice with. And when I snapped those arrows off, I remember sitting in where I parked my quad in Danny's Quonset. We're all just visiting, and I'm like, I can't, I was so sick. Like, I thought my hunt was over. I was like, I'm going to have to drive home and grab different arrows. And then I'm like, oh, I got these three arrows, and they were about, I want to say 2.5 inches shorter than the ones I was using. So, you know, that would throw everything out to whack. Yeah. Right. But they weren't micros. So I think that made up the difference. They were regular standard arrows. And so I set a, my target butt up in Danny's garage. And I said to Danny, I said, well, if I can shoot 20 yards with these things, then I can hunt with them. So I drew back the very first arrow, boom, and with the broadhead on, and I shot it, and it just went like totally bullseye on this stuff. So I'm like, okay. So luckily, I had those three arrows, and I shot War Pig with one of them, and they didn't have a lighted nock. So it was getting... it was getting kind of, you know, that dark time, like not that I couldn't see, but I couldn't see my arrow fly. So I didn't know if he hit him or not. So I give him, I know I didn't give him very long. I just did a little thing for the camera. And then I jumped down the stand and went right to the spot where I knew he was, an exact spot, because I had ranged it and there was no blood. And then I rewind the video. And I was like, okay, so I saw the exact trail that, not trail, but where he went busted through the trees. And I followed that and there wasn't one speck of blood. So like, I was just so upset. And then I was like, I heard kind of like a heavy breathing sound. And because all my other bears, every one of them either did the death moan or they just like, you knew you got them, right? This bear was just like, it ran away. It was just dead silence. And so I thought I heard kind of like a sound, like exhaling sound. So I went into the abyss and there was three bears. I remember this so vividly. I was so focused on, so what he did is he had looped around when I shot him, he crossed the quad trail. And then all of a sudden there was like a big bear trail. So he jumped right on the bear trail. There was no blood, but I figured that's where he went. It's the easiest path for him. So I got on this bear trail and I it's kind of like, because where my quad trail is, it's a bit of a rise. It drops down into like a kind of a boggy area where the bears come. There was three bears there. And I mean, I'm not even kidding when I say I was within probably 20 feet of one of them. And I remember talking to him because I was looking for War Pig. I was like, don't you bother with me. I was like actually talking to this bear. Like, and they're, you know, doing the typical, you know, huffing at me and carrying on. But I was so focused and I went down that and I was getting demoralized at this point because there wasn't one speck of blood. I was like, I lost this bear, the bear of my dreams. And I wounded him. And I just kept going and there's a deadfall tree over the bear trail and I could see steam coming up. And so I kind of peeked there and he was kind of just doing some, you know, death sort of gasp or whatever. He wasn't moaning or anything, but he was dead. And the reason there was no blood because the arrow was completely inside of him, all except for the nock was showing. So that's why there was no blood, because it went straight in.
Oh yeah.
And he was and guys, he's so wide that when I field dressed him, the arrow was completely inside him. Like there was no exits on the other side. The arrow was totally inside his cavity. It was crazy.
Wow.
So
nuts.
I grabbed so it's funny because that year Brenda was like, you need to start taking a radio because you freak us out when you come in so late and stuff like that. So I grabbed the radio and I blinged him and she's like, oh, is there something wrong? I said, I got him. So then I called them to bring in my quad trailer and they had quad problems on the way in. So I waited and waited and waited. And I was like, I'm sitting on the trail. So I walked back where he was, walked all the way back to where my quad was, because I always hike in, and I drove my quad into the bait. And then I just sat on the quad trail on my quad, and like at least four or five bears walked right by me going into the bait. And it's funny because now it's dark and the cameras were snapping pictures. So yeah. I knew bears were at the bait and I'm sitting on my quad, not running. It's not running or anything like that. And I'm like, where is Brenda and Danny? And it's a crazy story. They had quad problems on the way in, but they also ran into a cat on the trail. And these people are the greatest people you'll ever meet in the world. Like I just love them to death. Like they're lifelong friends now, but they ran into a cat that was injured on the trail and they thought it was their house cat. And so that's what took them a long time. They had to kind of deal with that. And then when they got in, they didn't have any electrical in Danny's quad. So they showed up, they didn't tell me anything about the cat. And we took a bunch of field pictures in the dark. And I'm like, I don't care if I get back to camp at 3 a.m. This bear's coming out tonight with me. So we had to cut trail into where he was and we got him loaded. We took some field pictures. Brenda did a really nice prayer for him and we got him loaded up. And then I thought I was going to have to pull them back out because the quad was acting up. We got back to camp, and this is crazy, guys. This is true. We back the quad up and we hang them up where we weigh them. Danny's got a scale, a digital scale. And so I back up, we hook them up to the scale and we lift them up, and we're doing that. And all of a sudden it's crazy, because they didn't tell me about this cat, but all of a sudden Brenda looks like she just saw a ghost, like really. And all of a sudden she looks at Danny, and Danny said, and she says, Benjamin. And all of a sudden they both just started acting really weird, to the point where I said, what's going on, guys? Like, what's going on here? Their cat had walked into the shed, which they thought was dead. and they're like, Muck, we, so then they told me the story, and I was like, well, why didn't you tell me about Ben? And they're like, because we didn't want to upset you. You know, you had just gotten the bear of your dreams, and like this cat was dear to them. Well, it turns out it wasn't their cat. So, but it was so incredible that I actually picked it up. I'm like, what's wrong? Like, what's going on? Like, cause Brenda looked like she saw a ghost, and they had to deal with this cat on the way in. And so what had happened, we think, is one of, like, they're so remote, but they do have somebody that's fairly close that kind of has like feral cats. Mm-hmm. And it just happened to be the same marking, kind of a orange tabby or whatever they are. They think it must have crawled into my quad. And then when I drove in, it must have tumbled out and got injured, and they thought it was Ben. So when Ben came walking into the, cause their cats are very friendly. When Ben come walking into the thing, they just literally thought they saw a ghost, because they're like, I know Danny said, I know I took care of his cat. And so I was like, I can't believe you didn't tell me, but they didn't want to steal my thunder. So we tagged them, and we weighed them with, so that we get a true weight of them. And then we measured them. We took all the measurements, and then we just left them till the morning. And then I field dressed them in the morning. But I know that's a long story, but that's kind of how it went.
Yeah. And then how do you cut that short? That's amazing. Like,
right. And you know, I reviewed the video, not at the time, because I didn't want to wreck the video, but when I got back to camp, it's digital, so I could throw it into a card reader, and I put it in the computer, and because the screen's so small on those cameras, I could see, fellas, like, I don't know if you caught the episode on Pursue the Hunt, but you can see the arrow goes just right perfect. Like, and I thought I made a terrible shot, but it turned out to be the most perfect shot ever. It just went right in behind the back ribs, because he was quartering away. And like I said, it went right into him and never came out. It didn't poke on the other side or nothing, but
that's crazy.
Awesome.
And that's why he didn't bleed either, because it was far enough back that it double lunged him. It took both his lungs out, and that was the saving grace, but he didn't bleed at all. It was crazy.
Yeah, well, there's no exit wound, then yeah, there's no, you're not going to get as much hemorrhaging as you do with the pass through. Man, that's crazy.
And you know, all my other bears, except for the one, I've always had pass through. So this really bothered me.
That's insane that it must've been just massive. What kind of broadhead were you shooting on that arrow?
100 grain G5 Montec. I couldn't have made it a better shot, like at quartering away like that. Like, after I got to watch a video, I felt a lot better that I made a good shot. But
yeah, no doubt,
it is. That's the one nice thing about lighted knocks, you know what I mean, especially in that fading light, you can see the body, you can be like, all right, it's in the vicinity of where I wanted it, or it's bang on where I wanted it.
Right. And recovering them too. Like, you know, if you do happen to stick them and it doesn't go all the way through, usually with a lighted knock, you recover your arrow. Mm-hmm. Wow. Holy, I was so stressed out. I thought it wounded the bear of my dreams.
Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt. That sucks. Cause then you're tracking them and it's getting dark. And the other bear's around too. You never know what he's going to look like in the morning if he dies early and then he's there all night.
Well, and that's just what, I mean, I think I told you the story about what War Pig did to my bear the year before. I shot that 425 pound bear, set it up for field pictures. I didn't pack it out at night. I just set my buddy of mine, like I said, Blair, that told me how to set up awesome bear pictures. So I had him, I tagged him, I had him all set out nice for the morning sunshine. We'll come back the next day and he's all balled up and ripped apart. And here War Pig showed up on camera 30 minutes after I left. So War Pig had mangled my dead bear. Mm-hmm. It was crazy.
Wow. Yeah. That's nuts.
Something else.
Yeah, well, good job, buddy. That's quite the adventure. 4 years in the making, man. That's awesome.
Yeah,
it was... that always connects when you connect after.
So here's the craziest thing that to end this War Pig story off is. So a buddy of mine, he's a dear, dear friend of mine. He's the promoter of the outdoor show that I just was at here this weekend. His name's Darren Wandy, and he does the podcast with me. He's my partner. And his boy just turned 12 or 13 and got his hunter safety. So I wanted to get him a bear really bad, because bear is a really good first animal, and especially with archery equipment. So 2 years ago, he didn't get a bear, but he only came twice. So I said, I want to get Nate a bear. So I killed War Pig on June 2nd. June 3rd, took a bunch of great pictures, field dressed him, you know, cut up his meat, did all that stuff, got the hide prepared. And then I called Darren. I said, hey, get Nate up here. Let's get him a bear tonight. Because the weather was perfect. So him and they only live about an hour and a half. So him and his son come, and we go to one of my other baits. We didn't go to the bait where War Pig was. Guys, a 500-pound pure chocolate boar comes in. Like, mind-blowing. Wow. I even said to Darren, the two biggest bears I've ever seen in my life have been in within 2 days of each other. And he was using a crossbow, the kid was, and the bear came right to the barrel, and he didn't shoot him. Now, I think, so Darren and his son were in the two-man stand to my left, and I was videoing with the camera in a single stand. So I wasn't watching those guys. I was watching the bear. The bear chased off a small black right off the barrel and came right to the barrel, and I thought they were going to shoot him. Like, he was like 10 yards away, and they didn't shoot him. But I think they were moving. Like, I think Darren must have been trying to get Nate in a shooting position, because the bear kind of looks up at him and then just turns around and walks away. No. So my target bear this year, and it's unfortunate because I would love for Nate to get him, but this year, because I left my cameras in all summer, went to pick him up or pulled him last fall, and he came back and checked the barrel, and he's a giant. He's every bit as big as War Pig. His head's not as big, but his body's every bit as big, and he's really he looks like a chocolate lab. He's so big.
Well, that's cool.
So I wonder if there's some good genetics there that are being, you know what I mean, if they're related and all to have. I mean, big bears like that, that's exceptional.
Oh, and I never seen eyes on that bear before. Like, he just showed up out of the blue. Like, we had one picture of him at the barrel at night. And I remember saying to my nephew, Lan, and I remember saying, I think we have a big brown, because blacks look black, and colored bears like cinnamons and stuff, they look kind of white in you know, black and white pictures. But I said, this was kind of in between. I said, I think we got a brown bear on there. Only one picture of him. And he was giant. Like, but you know, their bears are so transient. I was like, well, whatever. And I still remember to this day, I remember, you know, kind of watching this little 150-pound bear, black bear at the bait. And I was looking, and I looked, and I'm like, almost made eye contact with this bear at a distance. And I looked at Darren, I'm like, holy cow, a great big brown's coming in. And I'm like, be ready. And it didn't work out for him, and it's unfortunate. But so that's our target bear for this year. We nicknamed him Vico.
That's cool.
Yep.
Yeah, that's going to be, that'll be a good one. Hopefully. I wonder how big, and you haven't seen him this year, so.
Well, we haven't got up there yet.
Yeah, so. right.
But he was there. He was there in July, August, because I left the cameras rolling. Mm-hmm. So he came by a couple of times. So if he survived, like if he didn't get shot in the fall, or if he just didn't move off, he'll be there. But that's the thing about bears. If you like, ours is pretty secluded area. If the farmers don't have a predator, like if the farmers don't shoot them with their tag, they usually, he'll come back, just like War Pig. So. Right. That's our target bear for sure, is Vico.
Right. So how far did you say those baits are apart?
Like, in miles wise?
Yeah, like from Vico to where War Pig was generally.
Probably six to 10 miles.
Okay. So a ways. Yeah. I was wondering how close in vicinity those big bears will get to one another, because you think they'd be kind of territorial, especially when they're that big.
Well, if you talk to a bear outfitter, and I'm not a bear outfitter, but if you talk to them, they say they're like a whitetail. They'll travel up to 20-30 miles, but I think when they're big, like you said, I think they're very territorial. Like, yeah. And the reason I say that is because we've killed some guys. We've killed some giant bears out of that bait. Like Landon, my nephew, he killed almost a 20-inch, 400-plus pound. I killed a 20-inch, 400-plus bear. And then War Pig was 550. The very next day I killed War Pig, a great giant black was on the bait. I got pictures. I post them on Facebook. But I think when they're not a dominant bear, I think they wander around a lot. But I think because War Pig lived right there, I don't think people would have talked about him if they would have seen him. So he wouldn't have been too transient. I think he just lived there. And maybe when the rut was on, he moved a bit. But I think when they're the dominant bear, I don't think they travel a whole lot. I think they just run a kind of an area.
Right. That's
especially if they have everything they need right there.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, because if you're the alpha, there's really no reason to move on. But that's why I was wondering, because maybe you said he wasn't showing, but maybe is there a chance maybe that bear that you got the year before, they were bumping heads, him and War Pig?
Well, they had to I did have see, that bear was crazy because I didn't have him other than I had him on camera, but I try to give my bears a name and give them a personality. And that bear, I never got a chance to even give a name because he was like War Pig. He was like very nocturnal. Right. And I had him on camera for a few times, but never actually set eyes on him during the daylight. So for that bear, that was crazy. I was actually sleeping. It was beautiful that day. It was like plus 20 and no wind. And I was listening to the crickets or the frogs and the geese and whatnot. And I just happened to look. It was about 7:30. I shot him at 7. I just kind of rolled my eyes open for just a quick second. I'm looked staring at this giant black bear walking in. And I thought it was War Pig at first. And then when he got to the bait, I was like, it might not be him. But anyways, when I killed him, I was like, there's no way I could pass him up. I couldn't pass him up. So to have War Pig rough him up the way he did, and I know it was War Pig because where that bear died, he went down the quad trail, kind of where War Pig came in, went up the trail, and then did a hard right. So he basically almost did a circle. He was only 15 yards from the bait as the crow flies. And so when I set him up, like I said, I set him up for beautiful pictures. Like he's all splayed out. His head was forward. I was like, oh, the morning sun's going to show him awesome. And when I came back, he was all twisted up. Like his arms were all, and I had him facing north and he was facing south and he was all in a big ball. And he was kind of, you could tell he wasn't ripped up, but he was like, you could tell something was biting at him. And, when I pulled the cards, War Pig came in. So I walked out of there at 7. War Pig was there at 7:30. And then War Pig was there again at 6 in the morning. I didn't come until after breakfast. So it was 100%. It had to have been War Pig and him were locking horns. And he must have just been completely insulted that bear was still there.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Crazy.
They're fighting for territory. And especially when you get that close to the rut, the bigger ones you figure are going to be looking for dominance.
But you know what, that just shows the power of those bears and of War Pig, because I weighed that bear that I got 2 years ago and he was 425. So he's a stud in his own right. And War Pig had him balled up. Like if you were wrestling with somebody that was 100 pounds less than you, it was crazy. Like he just flailed that bear around. It was insane.
Wow.
Yeah. If you ever see those bears go out? Yeah. It's pretty gnarly, man.
I think that'd be an experience I'd love to have. Just, obviously we can't
bait
here in BC, but to be able to sit back and watch various bears come in, watch the interactions, watch how they play or not play, how they react to other bears coming in. And I think the last time you were on too, you talked about how some just they scatter and you're like, oh, something, they know what's coming in.
Yeah.
They don't want nothing to do with it. I'd love to see something like that. It's crazy.
If there's one thing that's crazy about bear hunting over bait is that what you just mentioned, is that they know another bear is coming long before you'll ever know. And it's just insane. You'll have a bear, its head's in the barrel, and next thing you know, its head's up and it runs. And you're like, oh, you know something's coming, but yet you can't see it or hear it. It's crazy.
It's amazing too, they have the foresight to tell if that's a bigger bear coming or not.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like if it's heads in there and it's taken off and it just knows. It knows something big, badder is coming. They don't want any part of it.
So, you know, War Pig was so unique that I don't know what his, obviously he's a big dominant bear, but when he came in and all the times that he came in that night and almost come in, the other bears never once scattered. Like if you look at, if you watch the video, the final video, there's a bear at the barrel when I shot War Pig, and he kind of stands up and looks at War Pig as he runs away. And, but he didn't scatter. That 2 years ago when I was with Mike and he came in, same thing. I don't know what it was about him, but it's funny. It seems like the sows run off the non-dominant bears. And of course the young, what I call teenager boars. But you could, I remember years ago when I first was learning to black bear, one of the old guides that I would learn from used to tell me, was like, when it comes to field judging a bear, they're like, you'll have a good boar by the way they come into the bait. Like most of the boars that come into bait, they come in with a purpose, and they truly do. Then I think that's why these bears scatter, right? Because when a big mature bear comes in and he wants to take over that bait, or a big sow, they come in with like boom, 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 like they're intimidating just in their own light. But I do like to watch smaller bears at the perimeter try to intimidate bigger bear at the barrel when they're doing their, fake bluffings and stuff like that. It's kind of fun to watch because the other bear is like, are you kidding me, dude? But they're always trying to scare each other. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it'd be pretty cool to see for sure. Yeah, it's kind of like you see that with grizzlies too. Like when you see a grizzly walking, you like, he knows he's top dog. He's not fucking around. He's got no worries in the world about anything. He's cruising, head down. He doesn't care, walking in a straight path.
And that's the way War Pig came in the final time when they said the camera took a picture, was that way. He was walking with a purpose. Like the first few times he was really sketchy, but the last time you could tell that he wanted into that bait. And so he came boom, 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 boom. But then like he knew I was there. And I think that's the difference between all those other bears that were there. They didn't give a shit that I was there. But War Pig did. And that's why he never actually came to the barrel any time that I was ever there. He never came to the barrel. He always skirted the bait. And just because he knew I was there, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's a good job, buddy. Awesome. Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
So you're heading back in here pretty quick, I guess, to what's the weather like out there?
Well, it's nice now. It's 15 today.
Oh yeah.
It has been crap. Like we got a massive snowstorm a week ago and it dumped literally in Regina here almost a foot of snow. Heavy wet snow. So it's a good $1 million snow for the farmers, but it backed us up a full week of bear baiting. So I'm not going in until next Saturday. Me and my nephew are gonna go in and throw in. I've got 25 frozen beavers. I'm going to fill the barrel right full of frozen beaver, and then I'm just going to let it soak for a week and come and pull the cards.
Nice.
So there's really only two times that are really good for bear hunting. Right when you first bait, so that first 2 weeks or so, and like remember, I usually get my baits going in April. So that first, May 1st to the 5th or to the 9th, and then again in June when the rut's on. It seems like when they first come out of the den, they just want to eat so bad that the hunting's spectacular.
Yeah.
But then they hit what they call the dandelion lull, which is when the things green up and the dandelions pop up. It seems like the boars disappear, but then they all show up again in June when the rut's on.
Right. Well, that makes sense.
You adjust your baiting at all? Kind of compensate for those times of year, like you're going in with just straight beaver right now by the sounds of it.
Yep.
When do you adjust, or do you adjust what you're baiting with?
Absolutely. That's a great question, because right now I'm just putting beavers in there, and because they're out of the den, they're hungry, and beavers a natural source of food of theirs. And so I want to drive them crazy, and I'll put it in a barrel that they really can't get them out. They will get them out eventually, but because I'm putting frozen ones in there, it's going to take them several days or to get them out of there. And it's just to drive them crazy for the smell. So once they get a smell and they're like, okay, because the thing with bear is they know that your bait's there, and they'll come through even in the middle of summer and you have no bait there, they'll still come and check that bait site out, and with the hopes that it'll be there. So they're like I was telling somebody at the banquet there last night, I guaranteed the bears that are out already that come to my bait are already coming to my barrel or my spot every night, probably to see if the bait's out. And so I'll put it out, let it soak there. I call it soak, but let it stink and let them move the barrel around trying to get the beaver out of there. And then when I come back, then I'll put beaver in there and then I'll start with grain. Like a buddy of mine owns a restaurant and he keeps his fryer grease for me. So I'll throw oats in a one barrel and with fryer grease, and then I'll do the beaver. And the reason I say it's a great question is because about 3 weeks or 2 weeks into baiting, they don't want your beavers anymore. It's crazy.
Really?
They want beavers early. And oh yeah, because I have this thing, it's called a beaver basket. It's a cage that has like it's basically checker plating or whatever, but it's a cage, and I put a beaver in there and they can't get the beaver out. So it's just strictly for stink. They can roll it around, but they can't get at the holes are, there's a gazillion of them, but they're not big enough that they can get the beaver out. And so it's just for smell. You could see in the cameras that early season, they will, you know, dig a 3 foot hole in the ground just to get at that cage. But in say middle of May, they'll sniff it, but they won't roll it around or nothing. Because they're on to, like, I give them like donuts and grain and stuff like that a little later on. That's right. They get into the sweet stuff and they really like that. But then again, in June, they will go back to beaver again. It's crazy. It's like, I think it has all to do with the greens that they're eating.
Right. They're getting enough foliage probably from, like you said, the dandelions and all the green grass that's already popped up now. And then they want to go back to protein maybe.
I remember the very first beaver basket I put out, I actually chained it to the bottom of the tree. And I put that beaver basket in there when I went in there at 6 o'clock at night, and they broke the chain at 10 o'clock and they disappeared. I lost that beaver basket for a whole year till the farmer found it on the edge of the field. And that's how insane. And they dug a great big wall or hollow trying to get it. And they eventually somehow got the chain broke. I don't know, galvanized chain or whatever it was. But so then now we raise them at, we stand on the quad and we'd put them up high so that they could stand up and knock it around and stuff like that. But I remember saying to Landon a few times, like, you know, they didn't even touch that beaver. And they'd be like, you know, 2 weeks they didn't touch it because they didn't want anything to do it. They wanted everything to do with the sweets and stuff. So.
Crazy. Do you think anything has to do with the association? Like, you got your beavers at first, you got your greens coming up, and then you got your fawns and calves starting to drop in June. Do you think there's a correlation there between them going back to the meat then?
You know what? That's funny you should say that, because I never actually even thought about that, but it just, a light bulb went off my head, and you're right. Calving is right then. Mm-hmm. And I bet you that they're, yeah, 100%. They're probably, because I mean, there's stats out there that say that black bears are hard on the elk and moose calves. So, so that, you know what, that's a great point. Like, they're right now, they could be getting easy prey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. Never know. Yeah. That's crazy. So is there a point when it becomes too hot?
Yes. And what happens is they start rubbing their hides. Right. So I've said this so many times. I'm like, I don't know how they do it. They, you know, it could be 25, 30 above and you're in the stand in the beginning of June and they're just black as black and they're coming in and there's like war pig. I got them on. So I got usually set up about five cameras at my site, and a couple of which I put on video, but they always burn out before the other ones because they take up so much data, or not data, but SD and stuff. But I got War Pig on camera in June. He's so fat and he's so hot that he actually leans on the barrel. He got the barrel kind of tipped over and he's like, you could see him, like his mouth is open and he's breathing heavy. He takes his big freaking arm and he just kind of plops it on the barrel and he kind of looks right at the camera and he's like just heavy breathing. You tell that the weather has just got him beat.
Yeah.
So then what they do is they try to rub off that, that winter hide and that's when you should shut her down, because you really shouldn't shoot unless you're sustenance strictly for bear. You shouldn't shoot them when they're rubbed, because all you really have is the skull then, and you don't have the hide. So
yeah. But it doesn't, like say you get a really crazy heat spray or or you get a heat wave in middle of May. Is there a point, does it for like baiting wise though, does it get to a point where it's just, it's too hot and they're just not interested in the bait if it's too hot, or is it, they're always going there as long as they're going to go there.
Yeah. It's they're completely driven by their stomach. Right. Yeah. So no, I would say as long as you have food there, they're coming.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you said before there, one thing you said is, they were hitting the bait. They were coming to check the bait, even like just to come check it to see if you'd put bait in there yet. So they must, after a while, they must get used to those baits being there. Eh? And they know they're there and they're just constantly checking them, waiting to see when you're coming in.
Oh yeah. Like when I was explaining how the kind of the history of Warpig, I said that the first bait I used to have was fairly close to Brenda and Danny's, and their yard dog had passed away. And I remember Danny saying to me, Muck, you mind moving the bait a little farther away? Cause now we're getting so many bears into the yard. And for sure. Cause it was like 300 yards, you know, in the bush, but it was like I said, when I was standing sitting in my tree stand, I could see the top of their lodge from, and so I said, sure. And so what actually worried me was that we had to relocate that bait. I was like, oh my God, I just spent a couple of years trying to get this big bear and now I'm going to relocate. But he showed up right away. So it's like, right. Yeah, okay. They were coming. So that's why those bears were coming to into the yard, because the dog was gone and they were looking for the barrel. And when the barrel wasn't there, they just wandered into the yard. Mm-hmm. And so when I moved it, we were like another mile or so, or 2 miles, I think is what it was. We moved it 2 miles more into the bush, and actually a better spot. In hindsight, it worked out way better for us, because I think it gave the bears way more security in the deep timber. But we were worried that Warpig wouldn't come back, but it was natural. And now, like I said, I wanted to see what we were getting for bears throughout the summer. So I left the cameras run all, and I went and got them in August. And it was just crazy. Every day there was bears walking by. And, you know, by then the grass is tall and the green trees are all greened out. And you'll get pictures of these bears walking through there, looking out at the tree where the barrel was, and then carrying on. So that's why I knew that big brown was still around, because I at least got three pictures of him. I know for a fact in July where he was checking out where the barrel was.
Right. So when you're going in there every time, are you baiting? Are you bringing bait in with you when you're going in to sit in the stand?
Yes. Right. So the way I did it, because I hunt mornings and evenings, I was like, I would go in bait my main, what I call my main baits around 11 o'clock. And I actually stopped kind of, the one that I'm going to hunt, I stopped doing that because the damn bears were, the early bears were cleaning me out. Mm. And they weren't leaving bait for the bears that were coming in right before dark. And I wanted to hold on to those bears. So if I'm not hunting the bait, yes, I will go in around 3 or 11 o'clock and I'll fill up the barrel or put in whatever I want in there. But the bait I'm going to hunt, I don't bait until I walk in and
throw it in there.
And I throw it in there. So I'll drive my quad in, I'll throw the barrel, the bait in the barrel, and then I'll drive my quad out, and then it kind of snafus them. They think that I'm gone. Right. And then I sneak back in and I sit in the stand, because right. I'll tell you, that quad is a dinner bell for them.
Yeah, I bet.
It truly is. Like, it's crazy. Next weekend, when I go to bait, and I'm not kidding, it's happened every year. When I go to bait, because you're in there for about 45 minutes to an hour, you know, putting your barrels out and dicking around, I guarantee there will be a barrel come in while I'm setting that bait up for the first time. It happens every year.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, like I'll be, you know, you're making noise and putting barrel, tying the chain to the tree and you know, all that kind of stuff. Next thing you'll look over and there's a bear like 10 yards away from you. It's they're waiting for me.
You ever get a good bear? Like, you ever shoot a bear when you're setting up, or you...
Oh yeah. If you got time, I got to tell you about a story about that. Oh. So my nephew Landon, great guy. He's the great guy. And he's the guy that he wanted to get into bear hunting with me. So he's like, do you mind if I jump in with you and help you out? And I'm like, absolutely. More the better. So the first year that Landon got his bear, it was just awesome. We went in there and I wanted him to get a bear first. And there's this bear we nicknamed Brownface. He's just a jet black bear with that, you know, that teddy bear brown, like the, your hat, like you see how on that bear on your hat's got that really nice kind of like light brown. We called him Brownface. And I wanted Lannan to get Brownface. And so we sat at that bait for Brownface, and he did come in, but he came in the morning one time in the dark, and he didn't stay until legal shooting in the morning. And then he did come at night a few times, but there again, right at dark. So we never got Brownface, but this other bait that we had, it was just a new bait. And it was awesome. Like, it turned out to be one of our favorite baits. But so I went in there, and Lannan had to go home. So I stayed up there, and I was just baiting every day while I was hunting for war pig. And Lannan came up the next weekend, and I was still up there. And I had said to Lannan, I said, there's this big boar that every time at 11 o'clock when I drive my quad in, he comes in, and he comes like right like 10 yards away. And I said, and he's got a big shaggy, like he's got like a, almost like a razorback. He looks like a big wild boar, kind of like he's I nicknamed him Shaggy. And, but I said, he's a big bear. He's 300 plus. And, I go, you should shoot him. But I said, every day at 11 o'clock when I went to bait, Shaggy would come in, and like, just like clockwork. And I said, I'm afraid that if we don't shoot him, he's going to hook onto a sow and he's going to be gone. So Lannan was also hunting war pig. Like, it was, we had a kind of a deal that we both, if one of us got it, great. So Lannan wanted war pig too. And I didn't blame him. So we were sitting together at our other bait where war pig was, and Lannan just had a new baby. And, he was just little. So, I remember we went in at, I'll say, a Monday, and we were sitting at our bait for war pig, but we went into the other bait to bait. And I said, you watch, when we come in, Shaggy will come right in. And, so we were just doing this, screwing the lid off of the barrel. And sure enough, he came in just like clockwork, and like right to the quad. So I'm not talking 20, 30 yards away, like feet from us. And we'd have to chase him away. And I said, Lannan, you need to shoot that bear. Like, we should sit tonight and get Shaggy. And he's like, oh, I really want to get war pig. And I said, well, yes, but it was his first bear. So I said, this is a great, awesome first bear. And I said, he's guaranteed he's Pope and Young for sure. And he's like, I don't know. So we go back to the lodge, and he'll kill me for telling the story, but he just had a brand new baby. And so we're sitting there, we're in a big, like, Danny and Brenda, they're deer outfitters, but they don't hunt for bear or anything. But so this beautiful like log cabin lodge, and in the spring and fall, nobody's there. So they let us stay in there. And so we're in this giant lodge that's just absolutely gorgeous. And we're sitting there watching TV and his wife calls him, and he just disappears upstairs. And this is so funny. So I teased him for a whole day. We got to kill that bear. I'm going to want to get war pig and blah, blah, blah. And he was hell bent. Like, we're staying there for 3 days to get war pig. Right. And so his wife, Lindsay, calls him, and they weren't arguing or anything, but he went upstairs into one of the rooms and was visiting. And then all of a sudden I was watching Wild TV or something on the satellite, and Lannan comes down the stairs, and the stairs, it's a really vaulted lodge. Like, there's like attics and stuff like that where people can stay, and there's a big staircase, and Lannan's kind of slowly comes down the staircase, and he didn't even get three quarters of the way down. He goes, you know what? I think I'm going to shoot Shaggy. And I was like, really? He's like, yeah, you know, I was just thinking about it. Why am I being greedy and blah, blah. Well, I know why he wants to shoot Shaggy.
Yeah.
He was voluntold to go shoot Shaggy and get home.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay. Well, you know the deal. You've seen it. I said, for 5 days, every day Shaggy's been there. So we went in at 11 o'clock the next day, and, Lannan was, it kind of worked out for him, because Lannan did not want to shoot a bear from a tree stand. He was big on wanting to make a ground blind, blah, blah, blah. He wanted to be on the level with them. He really didn't like the idea of being up in a tree stand, which is fine. And so we went in with the quad, and, you know, we make a bunch of racket taking their barrels apart and blah, blah, blah. And it's crazy, but Shaggy didn't come in right away. And we're like, what the heck? I'm like, well, maybe he got onto a sow. And I was afraid of that because he'd been there for like 5 or 6 days, like clockwork every day. And so we're kind of a little bit disappointed. So what we said is, I'll tell you what, we filled the baits up and this is so funny. The quad is sitting right beside the barrel. I said, well, let's pull the camera cards and let's go up in the tree stand. It was beautiful out. Like it was absolutely gorgeous. Not a breath of wind. It was just picture perfect. And I said, why don't we go up, sit in the stand? We'll go through that. We'll put the card in the card reader and we'll go through the camera cards and maybe Shaggy will show up. And he's like, okay. So we filled the barrel up. We grabbed the cards. We put fresh cards in the cameras and we go up the tree stand and we're sitting in the tree stand and we're scrolling through pictures and stuff like that. And I'm like, Landon, right there. There's Shaggy right there. Sure enough, Shaggy's on his way in and the little bugger comes in and I'm like, okay, we got to make a plan. Landon's archery shit's sitting on the back of the quad. Like,
oh no.
And I'm like, well, okay, well, we know he's here, so we can make a plan. So I'm like, well, if he doesn't stand up on the freaking quad, and I'm like, okay, we got to spook him away because I just got a brand new seat for my quad because the year before that, Landon took my quad seat and the bears destroyed my quad seat. So I'm like, I don't want my new quad seat destroyed. So we chased him away real quick and he only ran, well, I don't know, maybe 30 feet and stopped because he wanted the bait. So I said, okay, Landon, we're going to drive the quads out I guess we were only on mine that time. We're going to drive the quad out and then we're going to hike back in and maybe we can make a sneak on them. So that's what we did. We jumped on my quad. We drove it, I don't know, 200-300 yards out of the bush and we snuck in and sure enough, Shaggy was on the bait. So we have a really good quad trail. So we're sneaking down the quad trail and I say to Landon, I said, well, what do you want to do? Do you want to shoot him from the ground or do you want to go up in the tree stand or what do you want to do? He says, well, I don't want to shoot him from the tree stand. So Shaggy kind of sees us and he just kind of runs, I don't know, 10, 15 feet just around a big spruce tree. And we walk right into the bait. Shaggy walks about, I don't know, to his left about 3 or 4 yards. And I turn the cat. Well, I'm videoing the whole way. And we're standing in the middle of our bait. And Shaggy walks under the tree stand and arrow and Lanham draws back and shoots him. And he's like, are you ready? I'm like, yeah. Hold on. I'm like, not a great shot. Like, hold on. I reposition my body. I'm like, yep. Shoots him, zips it right through. Shaggy runs off and I pace it off 6 yards. He shot him right standing right there.
It was what awesome. Pin do you put him on?
Yeah.
All of them.
And it was kind of anticlimactic because he was on such a routine, but Lana was shooting 81 pound bow and it just blasted like right through away at 6 yards. Oh, it was man. Awesome. And then this is so crazy. So we knew he was done because the arrow blasted through and we went and got the arrow and we did some video and we went and found him. And because he only ran 20, 30 yards, he was right close to the bait. We skinned him out and everything right there. No, we didn't. We actually just loaded him up. That's right. We took him back to the ranch. And Lannan's like, once we got him, tagged and field dressed and weighed and everything at the ranch, Lannan's like, what do you want to do tonight? Because he got his bear. I said, well, let's sit. I'll sit for War Pig tonight. And he Lannan's like, well, bear action at that bait where he killed Shaggy so good. I said, ah, you know what? We made so much racket going in there, with the trailer and the quad and blah, blah, blah. I said, let's sit for War Pig at the other bait. So we sit and we had good bear action, but no War Pig. Come back the next day. So we're going to head home now because we both have to work. So I'm like, let's fill the baits up. We'll pull the cards. We'll come back in a week, pull the cards. And this is so funny. We pull the cards, drive out with the quads, load the quads up. We're heading home. Lannan's messages his wife. Is like, we're heading home. He's got his bear. We get to the town of Kamsack and he's scrolling through all the camera things and he gets to the bait where he'd shot Shaggy and there's a giant 500 pound bear on there. And he's like, I told you we should have sat there. He was there at 6:30 in the evening, like totally daylighted it. I could have got a giant 500 pair, and no, I went and sat at the other bait. So then I'm like, well, I go, well, what time is it right now? And he's like, well, it's only 9 o'clock in the morning. I said, well, we got to go back and sit at that bear. At that. So we drove, turned around. He calls his wife. He's like, honey, sorry, we got a big bear. We got to go back. So we turn around. We drive all the way back in there, and we sat there all day, and he didn't come back in. But I was like, Landon's like, I told you we should shat. So anyways, that's a great story, because he, Landon wanted to shoot a bear from the ground so bad, and he ended up getting a bear that is so we actually call that bait now. We call that bait Shaggy Bait because of the story.
Oh, so, yeah.
Oh, no doubt.
That's cool.
6 yards. That's crazy.
Yeah, I paced it off. It was legit 6 yards. It was awesome.
Yeah.
And he just told me like 3 days ago, he just messaged me. He finally put a tape on that bear, and he was just shy of 20. So for a first bear. Yeah, for a first bear.
Excellent.
Yeah, I know.
Man, those are big bears. It's
they crazy. Are Manitoba. Like I'm like 8 miles into Manitoba from Saskatchewan, and they just grow them huge there. I don't know why.
Wow, I know. Crazy. Yeah,
something else. Insane.
I'm definitely gonna get you out here next year to hunt one.
Yeah, man, that'd be fun.
Because it's just over the counter. It's just you don't have to have an outfit or anything, so you can buy one. So.
Yeah, that'd be cool. You got any more bear questions for Mark? I want to talk a bit about archery before we close out.
I'm good with the bear stuff for now. Yeah.
Yeah. I had a bunch of questions on the list, but you kind of answered them as you're telling your story there. So I think we're good. We kind of covered all the stuff we wanted to talk about. And we have the last episode too. But you kind of went over how you bait and when you bait, and you kind of just fitted into that story, that great story. So that was awesome. How's the archery coming?
Well, you know what? I think, you know, we're friends and you probably follow. I had a really, really struggle with target panic.
That's why I'm asking. Yeah.
Like, it's going good. It's going very well. Now I had to go to a back tension or a hinge release, but you know, I was bad. I was to the point where I was going to step away because, you know, I killed War Pig with my bow, and I shot him, you know, slightly on the move and quartering away, and had no issues, and no time before did I have issues. But actually, I think my target panic came from archery mule deer. I got basically buck fever so bad. See, I never killed a deer with my bow before, so it was always just something I always wanted to do. And I got a buddy of mine let me hunt down in some country that they have, and they're just incredible mule deer. And I mean, I had a 180 typical at like 30 yards, which I would shoot in an archery shoot all day long. And I'd missed and I missed, and I just kept missing deer and kept missing deer and kept missing deer. And it just compound to where I literally gave myself target panic, and it carried over. I shoot a lot of competition archery, and it carried over to that, to the point where I shot some of my lowest scores. I just wanted to walk away. Like,
really?
It was bad. Like when I say walk away, I was getting like, I can't remember the last time I missed a target in either target or 3D. And I missed a couple of times in both target and 3D. I knew that there was a problem, and it was just because I was blaming the trigger off so bad. Right. If it didn't go off the way it's supposed to. So if I was shooting, say 10 shots, 9 would be good. But that one, if it didn't go off the way it should, I commanded it to go off, and it didn't matter if I was on the target or not. And I know for a fact, thinking back to it now, I know I was doing that to the mule deer. I know I drew back, and it's not that I didn't see him. I just was shaking so bad that I think I was staring at the deer so bad. I was thinking about all the, what it takes to make a proper shot. And I was shooting high and left all the time. And I got target bad, but yeah. I've since completely switched to a hinge. And we had a really big ASA tournament last weekend that I kind of facilitated. And I was telling one of my good friends, I said, since I went to the hinge, I can legitimately say that I haven't had one bit of anxiety since. And I mean, my scores at first were terrible. Like I was, cause I had to learn how to do it, but now I know how to do it. My scores are actually coming up. I'm hesitant to see how the hunting season is going to come. I think I'm going to go to a thumb release because it's kind of in between, you know, the trigger and the hinge. Just because I think, that I don't want to hunt with a hinge. I'm not comfortable enough pulling back on an animal and then not knowing, like, I guess commanding it to going off, because I would hate to shoot it in the ass or something like that, just because you weren't settled with like a hinges, even though I know for a fact that I could hunt with a hinge right now. I know I could, but I'd have to see, I guess. There are hinges that you can get that have safeties on them that you can click it. So I might do that.
Yeah. They do have them that you can, you just hold it down. And if you let it go too, it won't go off, which is, right. But we know a couple guys that, they hunt with hinge, like myself. I've used a thumb release, man, for a long time. But like every once in a while, I'll go back to a hinge, release, just because, like you said, it just snaps you out of, like, you really have no control of it once you get to a certain point in your draw cycle. That, yeah, it definitely, it's a good way to get out of that target panic if you're suffering.
Well, I think with the hinge, what concerns me is because it is tension activated or rotation, mm-hmm. When you're so jacked up on an animal and you just pull really hard on that, your back wall, if you're like, just because I know from shooting enough tournaments that if you're really hard in the back wall, you're already starting to rotate it. As soon as you let off that, your thumb on the peg, it could go off. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I'm scared of, is like just being so overly jacked up that I draw, because I pull really hard on that bow. And it's funny because I remember when I drew on War Pig, I had no anxiety other than I was nervous. I had no anxiety. Like, it drew back smooth. I settled in because I think I had enough time where that tree was, that I had enough time to kind of collect my wits, lined up my peep, lined up my pin, all that kind of stuff. And it seemed like with the deer, I didn't have that. I was I was rushed. And when I was rushed, I was just making terrible shots and it was forcing me to just blam.
Yeah, you weren't having time to just like mentally think about your shot process.
Right. And coming from a big 3D background where you have all the time in the world, right? You draw back, you settle in, you take your time, you make sure that everything's lined up and then you release the shot. Mm-hmm. Well, you can't do that. So my target panic stemmed, I guarantee it, because I think I'm not even kidding. I'm not even embarrassed to say it. I bet you I missed $7 this year. Mm-hmm. And that's not like me. Like I'm usually pretty consistent. So
yeah, especially hunting those mule deer, they're such a cagey animal that you can develop it, or just like, you gotta be quick, and a lot of times it's just draw and shoot. And one thing about the back tension release is that, you're moving around lots too in a hunting situation, especially here in in BC. Like, there's a lot of times when you'll be at full draw and you might, the animal's moving, you might have to make a small slight adjustment up or down, or you're shooting on a side hill or on a hill with elevated feet or elevated angle. So yeah, I mean, myself too, I shoot the back tension, but man, hunting with it, and I know we've had guests on this show and they talk about shooting it, and to me it's just like, it's just a little bit slip or not. And plus, it's nice being able to, if you need to, you can just punch it if you need to. If you have to force it, if you got to force that shot or you got to move a little bit, then you can just punch it. But yeah, the back tension, it's nice to have, but yeah.
I've never tried one, but I would like to try one to see if I can beat out any tiny bad habits that I have that I don't realize. Like, unless you're grouping super tight and there's days, well, I'm no different than anybody else. If days are frick, you can wrap your hand around all of them. And there's other days you're just like, what the hell is going on? And going back to the fundamentals. And I've talked to Kevin a little bit about it. And it'd be nice to go back to that hinge, which I've never tried, but I've read lots about it. I've talked to lots of people who have used it. It seems to that going back to the basics.
It eliminates
all that other stuff. You know exactly when.
Yep.
Yeah.
You don't know exactly when it's going to go off. But you have to go through the proper process to get it to go off.
Well, you're pulling through your shot is what you're doing. You're essentially pulling. You're forcing, in order to make the shot, you have to pull through the shot, and that's the thing. If you're shooting a wrist strap, then you're gonna you could punch the trigger. Even if you're shooting a thumb release, you can still, like, I've seen guys who sit there and they're like, they smack it rather, like, essentially, like when you're shooting a thumb release, you can do the exact same motion. That's what I do. I pull through my shot. I'm doing the same rotation as I do if I'm using a hinge. That's why I like switching back and forth, just because you shoot it enough, you unconsciously you get lazy, right? You get lazy, yeah. And you just like you do small things. But if you constantly, if you every once in a while you go back to that back tension, you get the right pull through motion, and then you just quite right away apply that same technique to your thumb release, and you're doing the exact same thing. Yeah.
So the way you shoot it is the reason that I got so much anxiety. So the way I kind of like, because I looked into it so bad, it's kind of like firearms, and I've taught so much firearms at being a cop, and I've taught thousands of hours of remedial at the police college. Archery and firearms are, shooting the gun and the pistol is almost exact same. So there's really two types of what I would consider, target panic or which is being afraid or anticipating the recoil, even though the recoil happens after the shot's done. So that's what most people are afraid of. They're like, they blink and they snap the trigger, right? Because they're afraid of the recoil. But the type that I had is basically stemmed from what you do, the way you do it. So everybody that shoots a thumb or even a hinge that are, really good shooters, they say they shoot it like a back tension. Mm-hmm. Just like you said, you pull through it and you basically allow if it's a thumb, you allow it to hook on your thing and you pull and it sets it off. So that's what was happening to me. I was using index finger for hunting, but I was using a thumb trigger for 3D and target. And so I was like, oh, I want to be better. I got to do this pull through like everybody says. And I mean, I wasn't punching before, but I would put my thumb on there and I'd just slowly put pressure on it till it went off. So then I started messing with things where I'd wrap my thumb around it and then I was pulling through it. And so what was happening with me is when I was pulling, like I said, 9 out of 10 times it broke nice. But on that 10th time, if it didn't break, because I'm pulling so hard, I pull myself off the target and I couldn't stop myself. I would just shoot and I'd be like, three. And I think that's where my target panic stemmed from. I couldn't control. I couldn't say, let down, you fool, let down, you fool. I couldn't do that. I let it go. I had to go. So that's the kind of target panic I was. It wasn't that I was anticipating the shot. I was like, pull, 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 pull. It's not pulling. Bang. I'd make it go off.
Yeah. I've seen a couple of guys have issues with that too. When you're talking to them about shooting, and what they'll do is instead of like a back tension and then pulling through their shot, they're just going like this, right? And they're not allowing their wrist, like they're not allowing that rotation enough so that the thumb release actually rotates in their hand enough to activate the trigger.
Right.
And then what they'll do is they'll just pull through and they keep pulling. But the problem with they're doing that now, what they're doing is that the string now, everything's getting offset because they're actually pulling through the back wall, right? They're actually pulling through it. So, I tell them too, like, don't, like, you're going too far here. Like, okay, like draw back or hit that thing or do something here. We got to reset. You're doing the,
and that's what I went through a little bit of this today. Like when I sent you that last picture there of my 80 yard shots, I was doing 60. And I was telling Kevin my shots at 70 and 80 were actually better than my 60. Cause I was starting from 60, just practicing cold shots, like first shot of the day in hunting season. You never know how far it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't happy with my groups. It's not that they were that bad, but it definitely not normal. And then I started realizing that, yeah, it wasn't my anchor, but it was from when I got my anchor set and my process from there back, I realized I wasn't doing it properly. And then I stepped back to 70 and I was like, just fresh start. I'm going to have one round of fun and then I'll go back. Well, man, my group went from this at 60 to this at 70. And I did a bunch of 70s just practicing that exact thing that you guys are talking about, just rolling that wrist and everything and keeping that thumb locked in place. And they just started going off naturally. And even my 80 was actually my best grouping when I did that. It was like a 5-inch grouping at 80. And I was like, I'll take that right now. Mm-hmm. Like after
When you shoot a hinge, like I'm like you, I've never shot a hinge before. So that, like, you have to get over the anxiety of well, one, they always say punching yourself in the face, or because with a thumb or even an index, you can draw sloppy and you don't have any, there's no repercussions. But if you draw a hinge sloppy, it's already partially rotated. Soon, you know, as soon as you get to a point, it's going to go bang. And that's where people punch themselves. So once I got over that first anxiety of like, you know, every time I hook my hinge in, I was so scared that I'm going to rotate my wrist or something like that. Once I got over that, I will say, you care less about the pin and more about the target now. Like, you know, and that's what they always say. You let your pin float. Don't get all stressed out about your pin, because, I'm trying to think of who was the big archer that came up with this, but they said that if you look at your pin and how it floats, like if you can track it, it's in the center more than it's not in the center. So if you can consciously think about, just forget about it, because it's your mind is bringing it back to the center, bring it back to the center, bring it back to the center. But guys can't do that. So if it's wobbling around there and it's here and they just and you know, it takes a second to compute, smash it, boom. That's why you get those really wicked misses, because it takes a second. But if you care less about that, apparently your subconscious brings the pin back to the center more than you think. And that's what I found with the hinge. I don't have that anxiety about blamming it off. I literally, there's the first little while I would be sweating bullets because I'm pulling. Nothing's happened. I'd let down. I never let down before. And so it taught me to let down. But the biggest thing now is you get into that click and now you know what to do. And I don't have that anxiety. So, I learned a lot by going with the hinge. I would like to hunt with it, but I'm scared I'd be too jacked up, pull it back, and it would sail 30 yards past them or something like that.
That's understandable.
Totally understandable. I get it too. And like I said, I shoot a hinge quite regularly, and I shoot, you know, it, I wouldn't be hunting with one by no means, but, yeah, they're great to have. And that's why I keep telling Pete he needs to get one. Just, they're good to practice with.
Well, you said it yourself. There's times where you have to punch it. There's no two ways about it. And you imagine, well, I shoot in Regina here, we get lots of wind, and I go to 3D shoots, and guys with hinges outdoors you could tell that the stress on them, because the wind is blowing them, they're wobbling around. And I mean, you don't know when it's going to go off. So it stresses them out. Whereas there's times where in the wind, you got to punch that thumb release. Yep. You know,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
absolutely. And I've shot thumb and finger, and I can honestly say punching, if you want to say a controlled punch, is a lot easier on the thumb, because I find like my hand's already in there. It's a lot less movement for me to just kind of squeeze it together as I'm pulling back, versus this motion. There's so much more motion in that versus just a tiny little squeeze. In my opinion, anyway, like for me, like I've shot both, and I can definitely tell when I force it, one versus the other, and controlled.
Well, and even more so with like a back tension, because it really forces you to settle into like, or just to like be more involved in your whole draw cycle, because you can't, like, if you have a wrist strap, is the most forgiving because it's held onto your wrist. You know what I mean? Like, you literally, as long as you're not hitting that trigger, the string's going back with you no matter what. I mean, you have a handheld, there is chances that it could slip out of your hand, or you could, you know, squeeze too hard and hit the thumb button or whatever. And then if you're using a back tension, I mean, all it takes is a little bit of a pull. You know, you're basically, if you pull, like if you're pulling with your index fingers, most of with your index finger, you're good. If you pull a little too much with, depending on the size of your back tension, you pull a little bit with more with one of your other fingers, it's going off.
Like, yes.
It's going to snap off on you.
Yep. So one thing that I had to, so, you know, YouTube's awesome, but it really can confuse you and overwhelm you too. So the hinge, I wanted to learn to shoot it properly. And I mean, I shoot a lot of competitions. So quasi pro type shooters are there, and I watch how they do it. But so I Googled on YouTube, a lot of the ways of shooting it. And the hinge is kind of neat, because you can shoot it so many different ways, and you can get yourself all screwed up too. Cause I mean, if you think about a hinge, they call it back tension, but it's really not back tension. You have to have rotation of that, of that. And where they get the back tension is as you pull, it just naturally rotates your wrist. And that's what they call back tension. But you say it yourself, you can pull a hinge in with the, without rotating it, it's not going off. You could pull your brains out, because that's happened with a hinge lots, where your muscles tense up and you're pulling, but you're not rotating, and you're like, oh my God. And like, you feel like you're pulling your brains out. Mm-hmm. So there's that way. There's true, like where you kind of dip your elbow down and pull back and it rotates it naturally. And then you can somewhat quasi command it, right? You can just like that. The way I do it is, I'm trying to think what was the other way that, the other way was, it's drawing a blank there. There's a third way of doing it, which is, relaxing your index finger. Mm-hmm. So that's the third way. So you pull with the thumb and your index finger. And then when you get in there, you kind of relax this, and just the relaxing it rotates it. That's the third way. I started with that way. It was really, really good. But the problem is, when I got into competitions, my muscles weren't working. Like, I felt like I was relaxing that index finger, but it wasn't. And then I was stressing out. So I basically had to go back to the drawing board with the hinge. And I think I do it the way it's supposed to be. I draw, I take my thumb off, I get into my click. And then what I do is, as I'm drawing, I just kind of curl that pinky, and that just causes a natural, a rotation, I think. And it goes off nice and crisp.
Yeah.
So yeah,
that's what I do too. So I shoot a 2-finger back tension. Same with my thumb release. It's regularly a 3-finger, but I cut the third. I only like using my 2, and I do the same thing too. So when I'm drawing, it's only in these 2 fingers, but essentially I'm rolling like I'm rolling like that at the same time. I am slowly letting tension or like pressure off of this finger as I'm rolling, just so it doesn't get hooked there. But I mean, it's different for everybody, and you're going to, like, you use it a few times and you find what works best for you and what's most comfortable for you. But yeah, it's definitely, it's one of those tools to have. They have them, and they sure are great, especially for getting rid of any, because I mean, like, everybody goes through an issue or a stage, doesn't matter how much they've shot, when you have a little bit of, like, you just get that little antsiness to, like, to just pull through your shot, right, to finish the cycle. So I mean, when you have that with the back tension, that's why I keep telling Pete he needs to get one, because this year he went to a thumb release his first year. This is your second year now, I guess.
Yeah, I got it last summer.
Yeah,
and yeah, I mean, what a difference. I mean, it's my shooting's improved a ton, because I could really focus on my mistakes. I knew instantly when I'd done something wrong. I may not have been able to figure it out instantly, but as soon as the arrow went off, be like, I either screwed up or I didn't. There wasn't like, oh, what happened there? It was like, no, something went off from point A to point B. End of story. Is all.
I think if you get a hinge release and you're working with what you have right now, is the right combination, because everybody that shoots a hinge and goes back to a thumb, they say they have that, they sort of cured that anxiety. And I think if you're struggling a bit with the hinge to get it to go off crisp, or sorry, the thumb, if you go to your hinge, but you still, like, your primary release is your thumb, I think you're going to, I'm at the point where I don't want to go back to a thumb just yet, because I want to make sure that this is kind of over. I know I'm not cured, but I think if I go back to the thumb too quickly, I'm going to go back to my old habits. But in your case, if you're shooting well already and you just kind of want to clean things up, then your hinge is basically just a training aid for you, and it'll help you when you are shooting those shots. So I'm looking forward to going back to a thumb, tell you the truth, but I want to make sure that I've got this hinge mastered before I do that.
Yeah, and once you shoot a bit with the back tension, like with the back tension release, man, it, like, I'll shoot and I'll find where I go days, just shooting the back tension. Like, I just, you know, you get into the groove and it's just, you start feeling that natural process, and you just really like it. Then you go back to your thumb, and like instantly you just got to make sure, like, you're just doing the exact same thing, but you're just replicating it over and over. And that's why I've like customized both my releases. So they're pretty much fit in my hand the exact same way. One's got a button, the other one doesn't. Well, one still has a button there, but it's firm, or it's uh it's part of the release. You can't push it or anything.
Well, I'm super impressed with some of the manufacturers. They're making the thumbs and the hinges the exact same hand angle and stuff so that you can go back and forth, because traditionally you couldn't, right?
Yeah.
And now, like Stan, for example, I know that they have the Onyx that's, you know, they're exactly the same, except for one's a hinge, one's a thumb. That makes life so much easier.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, there's a few reps now, or a few manufacturers that are doing that too. I think UltraView does it too.
Yep.
But, yep. Yeah. No,
that's one thing I like about my Carter. I don't know what they make for hinges and stuff, but I know with my Carter, not only can I rotate the barrel, obviously, and that can micro tune a little bit, but mine also has an arm that I can micro tune, or that I can tune first. It's kind of like a macro. Mm-hmm. So you can adjust it kind of all the way up here, and then, you know, you can roll it back. And then it's like, okay, that's comfortable. And then you can go to your barrel, and then you can kind of micro, like really micro tune it into your, well, your, everybody's hands are different, but you can get it just to fit in there just right.
Right.
Which is what it's not like a one movement. There's actually two positions that you can totally adjust, which I like personally.
So Mike, you were saying you hunted with a wrist strap, and then you just always shot thumb release at your three at the tournaments.
Yep. Well, I've hunted with all of them. I killed a bear with two bears with thumbs, two bears with wrist straps. But yes, that's how I always hunt. The reason being is I liked the connection to your hand for the release. Right. I did have a Stan Perfix that had a clip on it that clipped on the loop, and I love that for bear hunting. But when you're crawling around for mule deer and stuff like that, I didn't want to lose my thumb release. Mm-hmm. So I always just stayed with the wrist release just for that connection to my body.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to ask you why, what the reading was, but yeah, I guess that's a good one.
And I always used in hunting, a tournament wrist release. Oh, yeah. It was True Ball Execute, I think, because I had it set for exactly my, you know, trigger press and stuff like that. That's what I shot War Pig with that tournament wrist release. But I for the last 3 years I was a thumb shooter for 3D.
Right. Yeah.
But then I wanted to improve my scores, and I just got it in my head that I needed to pull through the shot. Mm-hmm. Everybody's like, oh, you're punching the trigger. I'm like, well, I sure don't feel like I'm punching the trigger, but I probably was. And they're like, oh, you got to pull through, and you pull through just like a back tension. Well, it got me so confused that, like I said, the problem is tension. If I'm at the house, there's no tension, I can shoot all day long and have it go just like a snap. But soon as, you know, you're making a 50 yard shot on a stupid javelina or something in a tournament, and there's tension, that's what's a killer was with the thumb. So that's why the hinge is so good, because now there's no, as long as I keep moving through the shot, I don't have any anxiety whatsoever.
Did you have any issues with just like punching the trigger? Because there's world-class shooters that they punch the trigger. And I mean, you know, they win world-class tournaments.
No, I was just basically, what I do is I would just basically touch my thumb to the barrel, and then I tried to just slowly, just like a slow trigger press of a gun. Yeah. I just tried to like that. But everybody like, oh, you're punching the trigger. So then they like, you got to wrap your thumb around it and pull through. Well, I think it was more confusing than anything. You know, and I was
But were you comfortable? So were you comfortable the way you shot before pulling through?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so if you like, and it was just because you felt like you had to do it, that's why you switched? Because I mean, the thing about archery is unique, and archery is mostly opinion than actual anything else. And archery is just, if you can manufacture the same process over and over and over again, you're going to be a good shooter. And like, you look at some of the shooters in the world, like world-class shooters, they do stuff that a lot of people say they shouldn't do, and they win tournaments.
Well, that's why I say it was a bit of a head game, because people were telling me to be better, I had to use back tension.
Yeah.
And so I was believing them, and I knew I wasn't shooting back tension. Mm-hmm. So then when I started trying to teach myself to shoot a thumb with back tension, I was like, is my barrel the right angle? Is my trigger set to a proper, you know, tension. Like I was, it was just really messing me up. And I maybe could have went back to shooting the way I was before, but I had it in my head that I had to shoot back tension if I wanted to be a better mm-hmm. archer. And you know, that's just when Joel Turner's shot IQ was coming out, and it's all about constant movements, keep moving and not punching the trigger. And so I was just buying into this whole, had to shoot it with back tension. Right. Now I will say, after it's 4 months now, I've been shooting the hinge. And I mean, I shoot in the house kind of like what you do. I mean, I shoot in the house every day, probably mm-hmm. as much as I can. And I will say that I have absolutely zero anxiety. Like mm-hmm. I don't worry about it going off accidentally. I don't worry about, like, my biggest thing is now is I want to teach myself how to balance my bow a little better, so I'm a little bit steadier. But I have no anxiety. Like it's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good job. That's good to hear.
Yeah.
Cool, man. Well, Pete, you got anything else for Muck? I think we'll wrap it up. We've been chatting here for an hour and a half. So.
No, thanks for coming on again. Always love your stories.
It's always great to have you on, buddy.
Yeah, it's thanks for having me. Y'all, that's for me. It's my whole life's about stories. I don't know. I just love it.
Well, hopefully we hear about another one here coming up this season.
Yeah, Vico. You know, it's funny. You obviously know what Vico is, right? You know, don't know what the term Vico is?
No.
Okay. Well, so Vico is a Saskatchewan thing for chocolate milk.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, really?
Yeah. So
hence the
that's why I was calling him. We call him Vico because it's chocolate milk. He's the color of chocolate milk.
Yeah.
And it's strictly a Saskatchewan thing. For growing up as a kid, you buy the milk jugs. They actually said Vico, V-I-C-O, Vico. When that bear came in, it was Darren actually that's called him Vico. And so it's just absolutely perfectly fitting for him.
That is now that we know what it is.
That's hilarious. I don't ever remember hearing that when I lived out there for four years.
But Saskatchewan, Pete, you should know.
No, not a Sask boy. I'm a mountain boy. Well, I just spent some time out there.
Just literally, when you have a second, Google Vico chocolate milk. I think they stopped making it probably 8-10 years ago. But through my whole childhood, Vico. That's it. Oh, hey, all the schools funny. Had Vico. All the schools had that's white awesome. Milk and Vico.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Okay, buddy, thanks for coming on. And
very much.
Thanks, fellas.
I know we talked about it last year, but we'd like to get you on. We're kind of going to do a little bear series here, but we're going to do one on mule deer. We're going to do one on elk. So when we get into the elk conversation, it'd be good to get you on and go over some calling techniques. And like you mentioned before, and the last time you're on, you're a big time guide out here in British Columbia chasing elk. So
yeah,
we'd love to get you on and talk some elk.
If you guys like Big Buck Magazine, the story of War Pigs in there, the spring issue. So if you guys
okay,
like
cool.
Big
Buck, I'll throw all that stuff up in the show notes and the film and where you guys can watch the film and all that stuff. And obviously links to your podcast. And while we're on the conversation, why don't you just plug your podcast and let the listeners know again where they can find and follow you.
Yeah, Darren and I just started it again. I took a kind of a year off, but it's all outdoors with Buck Simons, just moving to the, to the platforms here right away. So, I'm excited to get started. We took about a year and a half off mm-hmm. Darren was super busy. So
yeah, it's tough to fit it all in. Lives get lifey.
It does.
Yeah.
Okay, buddy. Right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
All right, fellas. Great talking to you.
Talk to you later.